From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a focused look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, On Deadline is turning our gaze to the Middle East, where the situation worsened over the weekend when Iran launched an attack on Israel. Tension between the two countries has been going on for decades, but this escalation began earlier this month, when the Iranian consulate in Damascus, Syria, was struck, killing 12. The strike killed Iranian General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, a senior figure in the country's Islamic Revolutionary Guard, plus six Revolutionary Guard members, four Syrians, and a Hezbollah militia member. While Israel has said it had nothing to do with the explosion, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, blamed the country. Iran vowed to strike back. Its retaliation came on Saturday when Iran launched an aerial attack on Israel that included drones and missiles. This attack was the first time Iran launched a direct military assault on Israel, which in itself is monumental. It also brought fears about the wider region getting engulfed in a dangerous and very deadly conflict. Iran's strike on Israel happened as Israel's war on Hamas stretches into its sixth month. Thousands have been killed in Gaza since the October terrorist attack by Hamas on Israel. Hundreds of hostages have yet to be freed, and the world continues to watch as tensions appear to be on a knife's edge. To explain more about Saturday's attack, Brenton Kearney, a retired colonel for the United States Marine Corps, joined Odyssey.
We know that there was an issue with an attack in Syria, and Iran said that they were going to retaliate. Is this the result?
Oh, I think so, Pat. Iran had certainly threatened retaliation over the last couple of weeks, and clearly they were sending a signal that they were going to go ahead and hit a strike into Israel as a way to seek revenge for the Damascus attack.
They didn't actually create any damage, according to Israel. And, you know, they have that Iron Dome, and the United States had resources there to stop the attack from the drones and the missiles actually hitting Israel proper. I think a couple of them probably got through. Were they just trying to send a message that, you know, leave us alone? Or did they hope that this attack was actually going to damage Israel?
Well, I think they were hoping for greater damage than the results indicate. And part of that is not only does Israel have one of the most effective integrated air defense networks in the world, but the United States participated. I've read that the UK also was involved in shooting down some of the drones, and so were the Jordanians and the Saudis. So it was quite a screen, a defensive screen that the Iranians were going to have to penetrate, and clearly they were unsuccessful at that. So it's which is good. You know, sadly, one young lady was hurt, but apparently not badly. So I think we all have to be thankful.
Well, you mentioned Damascus. Was there condemnation of that attack by Israel that killed an Iranian official, or was that considered justified?
Two parts of the answer. The Israelis certainly feel it was justified. Their informal reporting has been that that individual, along with his most important number two in command, who was also killed, were both involved in the October 7th planning and execution of that horror in southern Israel that we're all so familiar with. So the Israelis feel it's justified. According to international law, it's not, because everybody for centuries has pretty much said that embassies and consulates should be inviolate. And that's international law, and I think we have to respect that. But the Israelis felt that this target was too good of an opportunity to miss, and they struck, and they were successful.
Colonel, I got to tell you, what's going on right now in the Middle East is really frightening. The ongoing incursion into Gaza, tens of thousands of people killed there in response to that horrific attack on October 7th, and now this, and then the Iranian response. Is this conflict likely to get larger and envelop other nations in the Middle East?
You know, right now, Pat, I think it's not going to get larger. But, you know, something, the thing I learned in 31 years of being involved in military efforts is that these things tend to spiral out of control when you least expect it. And, you know, human beings involved in it, we're all, you know, very, very fallible, even in the performance of jobs that we've done for years and years. And could it fire out of control? Absolutely. Hopefully, the calmer heads in Iran, in Tel Aviv, Washington, D.C., and other parts, most importantly in the Middle East, will keep this thing bottled up and it won't go any further.
Now all eyes go to Israel. Will the country retaliate? If it does, many are wondering how the United States might react. Here, there have been ongoing battles about aid to Israel as it ceaselessly attacks Gaza, even as civilians remain there, vulnerable and with limited access to aid. White House National Security Communications Advisor John Kirby said on Sunday that President Biden is working to, quote, keep tensions from escalating. The decision for what happens next lands squarely with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his fellow leaders. To offer insight about what might happen, CBS military analyst Jeff McCausland joined Odyssey.
Well, Jeff, I'm curious as to what this means for the lack of stability happening in the area and what happens now.
Well, exactly. That's the big question right now, Adam. Now, the United States certainly underscored its support for Israel. I think that is categorical. Now, one needs to understand that the U.S. military forces were directly involved in the defense of Israel from this attack. U.S. military forces, air and ground, air defense, shot down at least 80 of these drones heading for Israel, shot down at least five or six ballistic missiles that were intended to strike Israel as part of that overall defensive effort. Undoubtedly, the United States provided Israel invaluable intelligence information and target information as this attack was unfolding, using all the radars we have on ships in the region, using the very other sensors we've got in the air, using our satellite imagery. All that was being provided to the Israelis. So it's not only the shooters, but it's the ability to acquire and track targets and pass that information to the shooters that are critical. So the United States clearly supported Israel in this particular defense. And you're right, the Saudis were indirectly involved, as were the Jordanians. I think the Jordanians may have actually shot some of these things down. I need to add, though, a little footnote there. My interpretation, Saudi, Jordanian, talked to a lot of those peoples, no love lost between them and the Iranians for sure, but they would see this as a violation of their airspace, a violation of their sovereignty as missiles were heading westward over their territory, heading towards Israel, and that's why they would do that engagement. Subsequently, they have said, oh, by the way, we're not necessarily going to stand idly by if you use our airspace to launch missiles or aircraft going eastward from Israel heading towards Iran. So they have tried to be somewhat of a neutral broker, if you will, in this unfolding conflict for fear of what you're suggesting, Adam, that if you now make another response, it might directly or indirectly involve other countries. And the upshot would be not only do you have a war in Gaza, a war with Hezbollah, a war with the Houthis, violence on the West Bank, you have a major regional war that stretches all the way from the Mediterranean all the way over to the eastern border of Iran.
There's this knee-jerk reaction now to immediately blame the president of the United States. It happened during the Trump administration, and it's happening now. We've seen a lot of the criticisms about the Iran nuclear deal and then the prisoner swap that freed up money for Iran. How much, if at all, did that play a role in what happened this weekend?
I'd say about zero, to tell you the truth. One can argue against the JCPOA, and I've been involved in that on the periphery. And some of the things I do, it was an effort to try to establish some kind of a direct relationship with Iran that over time might lead to a capping of their nuclear programs and subsequently perhaps them becoming having a more, if you will, normal diplomatic relationship with the United States and the West. That failed or was rejected, at least by the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Sadly, this particular attack, I think, will do anything. It will stimulate Iran to move even farther in the direction of a nuclear program as they may become more and more concerned to ensure they have an absolute deterrent, back to what I said a moment ago, to Israel. Don't forget, Israel is a nuclear power and has many, many nuclear weapons. If you're Iranian, you're fully aware of that. But, you know, it is interesting to me that you get this kind of response when it would seem to me at this moment what we should be doing is saying, one, the United States has stood behind the defense of Israel, number one. Number two, hey, this was a dramatic success. This is a dramatic success. We shot down 99% of the weapons that they launched. The Israelis, with seven missiles, all hit target in Damascus, killed a senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard officer, Several of his deputies were killed in the process. No other civilians in Damascus were killed, though, by the way. And after firing 300 weapons against Israel, what the Iranians have accomplished is some minor damage to an airfield, and they killed one Palestinian girl. Seems to me we ought to be saying, well, this is a great success. We have showed you to be totally impotent along the way.
Yeah.
What ought to be happening is the United States Congress should say, this is the moment to show our bipartisan support.
Yeah.
For Israel at this moment, that we should call for a vote for the military aid package for Ukraine and for Israel, which has been tied up in the Congress with the current speaker refusing even to consider a vote.
America isn't known for shying away from helping its allies. But with the current divisive political climate, an ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine, Israel versus Hamas, and now another potential conflict involving Iran, members of Congress are scurrying to take positions. It might be important to note here that Israel, Russia, Iran, and the U.S. are 4 out of 9 countries on Earth with nuclear weapons. This will come up later. But let's get back to Congress for the moment. Right now, what we know is that House Republicans want to curtail foreign aid. Many also expect little assistance for Israel to further conflict with Iran, even from Democrats. President Biden told Netanyahu that the U.S. would not participate in a strike against Iran because no further response was necessary. You gotta win. Take the win, Biden told Netanyahu about Israel shooting down Iran's missiles. To discuss the response from Congress, ABC's Stephen Portnoy joined Odyssey.
The White House reaffirming its support for Israel following Iran's attack against the country, but how will this play out in Congress? Stephen Portnoy joining us with the latest from Washington this morning. All right, Stephen, the Republicans in the House might now be warming to sending aid to Ukraine if it helps to aid Israel as well.
Well, we'll see. That's the key question this week for the House Speaker Mike Johnson and his Republican leadership team. Look, certainly the weekend barrage of missiles and drones launched by Iran into Israel intercepted nearly all of them by the coordinated response of the Israeli military with help from the U.S. and the British and the French. That said, the question becomes, what is Congress going to do? You know, there's pressure on Speaker Johnson to put on the House floor the $95 billion foreign aid package that the Senate approved 2 months ago. It includes $14 billion for Israel and roughly $60 billion more for Ukraine. It would be the smoothest and fastest way to get additional aid to Israel. Congress has yet to agree on an aid package for Israel since October 7th. Despite all of the machinations and the back and forth and the attempts by the leadership in the House under Speaker Johnson to pass something, you remember there was the initial bill that he passed for Israel that was pulled out of the IRS accounts. That went nowhere in the Senate. The Senate did pass the $95 billion foreign aid bill that includes money for Israel, but Speaker Johnson has been reticent to put it on the floor. Let's see what happens now. The House will take a series of votes on measures that are targeting Iran for tougher sanctions, but I have not yet seen anything on the House calendar for the week that indicates what the House is prepared to do for Israel. And yet, the majority leader who sets the schedule, Steve Scalise, said in a statement late on Saturday, practically as the attack was still underway, that the House would scrap its plans for the week and figure out a way to support Israel. So far, no bill has been offered.
Worries about a potential World War III have been at the forefront of many people's minds since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. With more conflict in the Middle East, including Israel's war in Gaza, attacks from the Houthi in Yemen, and now Iran's attack, it seems that these concerns just keep growing, especially considering the main wild card. That's Russia and its leader Vladimir Putin, who is closely allied with Iran. At campaign rallies, former President Donald Trump, who is now the presumptive GOP 2024 presidential candidate, frequently brings up the possibility that we're already on the brink of World War III. Biden even said in his State of the Union address that if Putin attacks a NATO ally, and there are many just beyond Ukraine, we will defend every inch of NATO. As we face a real threat of nuclear escalation, let's remember the words of Albert Einstein. I know not with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. With that in mind, many leaders of the Western world are walking a tightrope of negotiations and threats while hoping for de-escalation. No matter what happens, be sure to check in with On Deadline to get the most up-to-date information on the issues that matter most. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and Myron Kaplan. And by me, I'm Lauren Berry, and I'd like to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.